Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello and welcome to Unwritten from Odyssey and MLB. My name is Ron Darling. With me is Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy, today we're going to take this show kind of on the road. Every major league team spends half a season away from home, which means 26 players constantly moving between planes, buses, and hotels. All the first-class flights and luxury accommodations lead to some hilarious stories, but the travel can also be a grind, which is why there are some unwritten rules on the road to help keep everyone on the same page. We're going to define those rules today and share a few memories along with former big league pitcher Ryan Dempster. Jimmy, start us at the beginning. What were your first impressions of life on the road?
Oh, man, it was a beautiful thing. Everything's free and catered. You walk in, they have your key ready for you. You get per diem, which basically means, well, you think it means free food, but it's free money at least. It could be used as plane money for gambling on the back of the planes, or you can actually use it to buy food, or you give it away. You know what? People always seem to ask for money, and it's like, you know what? I have this free bag of money or this free, you know, little sleeve of money, and, you know, give it away to somebody, and that'll just keep the beggars away. But it was definitely a new experience. You know, walking in, being treated like a first-class citizen, not having to go to the hotel desk to check in and wait behind. You know, it could be a line of people when you're waiting down there 15, 20 minutes. You're getting in at 2 in the morning sometimes even later. And there are cookies and treats and water and Gatorade, bananas, all the good stuff. Then there's another part of it, and that is the nightlife. And that's where you have to learn who you are, the attention that you bring, the eyes that are on you. You don't always think that you're noticed, but there are professionals out there. And when I say professionals, I mean that in every good and bad way.
You know, what I found interesting about traveling the road, are you old enough that you had a roommate when you first came to the major leagues or no?
Nope. I was, we were solo dolo.
That's awesome. When I first started, you had roommates and it was the worst because a lot of times you'd be hooking up with a person you didn't really know that well. And their habits are not exactly your habits. And it was a little uncomfortable, but, you know, when we first came to Philadelphia in the '80s, by 86, we were kind of a circus on the road. I mean, everybody could not wait to be in the same hotel, to go to the same hotel bar, all that kind of stuff. So our hotel, ended up taking a big conference room and turning that into a private bar, a lounge, for the players on the 86 Mets so they wouldn't have to go out. It was crazy. It was like the vinyl ropes. People had to stand in line to maybe be chosen to come into the room.
Rock stars.
it was just crazy. Hey, you know what? I I was always thinking, did you have a pseudonym on the road? Did you use an alias?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And
what was yours?
So I eventually went with Willie Beeman, and it was something that was given to me by Kevin Jordan. And, you know, I didn't believe in, you know, getting these weird, strange calls and people calling your room, soliciting many things. I remember one time in Baltimore, just being in my room, this was maybe 03 or so, you know, still young before I decided to go with a code name. I got a massage. I mean, not a massage. I got a call from a woman wanting to come up and give me a massage. And I just thought, I just figured she had the wrong room. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And so I hung up. 30 seconds later, my phone rings again. And she's like, you know, running a whole spiel. And, you know, this is for real. This is what I do. And I would like to come up and give you a massage. I'm like, yo, this is weird. And, you know, and I remember hanging up again and the phone kept ringing. I'm like, I'm not answering it because I don't know if this is a prank. I don't know what's going on. And I was like, okay, so this really happens. And then and that didn't freak me out. It was like, oh, it was kind of like, you know, being broken in, like, wow, that finally happened to me. I'm glad I can go to the clubhouse and tell the guys the story. But in New York, we were playing the Mets. I think we were staying at Grand Central, the hotel.
Yeah, the Grand Hyatt there?
Yeah, the Grand Hyatt. And I got a call from high-pitched Eric from the Howard Stern Show.
That's right.
And I was like, this can't be real. You know, and he was just going on and asked me for tickets. And I'm like, you know what? This is like the fourth or fifth time I've had a weird call. And you know, maybe this is high-pitched Eric. It sounds just like him. But I'm switching my name because people should not be able to have access to me this easily, because who knows when, you know, it's something crazy like a threat or something. So I switched over to Willie Beeman, and, you know, I got that my rookie year because I was like, Willie, you know, I'm showing up, I'm showing out jewelry, you know, I'm doing
right.
My thing, you know. So it took a couple of years, but I finally went with Willie Beeman, and to this day, I don't use today. I go my regular name. People are not trying to knock on my door. But until I ended my career in 16, I was Willie Beeman all the time on the road.
Well, I wish I'd have known that information. No, I was I used to go as Christian Parker, which was the middle names of both my oldest sons, because all my family at least would know that they could kind of reach me if they had to. Game day, all right? So most ball players I ever played with have no problem sleeping until noon.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up, having a little breakfast or whatever. Were you, what was your day like on game day?
Shoot, no different than any other day. I would, you know, depending on the city, obviously. If it was a city that had good shopping and good food, I'm getting up around 11:30, 12. I'll probably leave around 1, knowing that the bus is at 4. Take a couple hours, go grab something to eat, and go shopping literally until the bus came. And if I was going to miss the bus, you know, you have to make sure you jump in a taxi then. It wasn't Uber yet. Uber wasn't
around yet.
Sometimes you're running across the street, bags in hand, jumping on a bus, going to the field.
That's right.
You know, but it was usually just really, it was really relaxed pregame. I wasn't superstitious. I'm still not. And, you know, a great city, I'm walking around. Great city with shopping and food. I'm walking and buying and trying to find somewhere to eat. And if, you know, we're down south in Miami, then I'll probably get up and go to the beach too. I wasn't afraid to jump in that water, you know, before
nice.
The game, you know, let that salt hit my body and float around a little bit, get me right. And you know what? I had a pretty damn good batting average down in Miami.
Boy, that's pretty funny because today it seems like all the players leave about 12 or 1 o'clock. To go to the ballpark. They have their lunch there. They have their dinner. They are kind of like cage rats, like basketball rats,
yes.
You know, the gym rats. They're there all day long. I was just like you. I would take the bus. I wanted to get there as late as I could, get my work in. But
And for me, like, I didn't see the point of getting there so early. You only have so much brain power to concentrate, to focus on what's going to happen that night. And it's daily. It's every single day. I needed a distraction. And the times, you know, I tried to come to the field early a few times. I would get there and I'm sitting in my clothes looking outside like, man, I could be doing this. I could be doing that. And for me, once I put on my uniform, it was like, it's time to lock in. So I couldn't get there at 12, 1 o'clock, put on a uniform, and then, you know, that brain power starts turning on what's going to happen today during the game. No, I needed to get that information as close to game time as possible, digest it. I've already thought about it. I've already done my visualizations. I'm good. When I get there, it's time to press play. So hanging out, you know, whether you're doing crossword puzzles, you know, training room, eating, lounging, whatever you're doing, that's great. It just did not work for me.
I got a good story for playing for you. So the teams I played on, I mean, there was a 30-30 on it. They were about as crazy as crazy can be. So,
and I enjoyed every minute of that.
You did. So we beat Houston in the sixth game of the NLCS. So we're coming back to New York on the plane. And you know as well as I do, the people that travel with the plane, the flight attendants, you get to know everybody because it's like one big family. It's usually the same flight attendants, the same food, all that stuff.
Yep.
And we were coming back, and I was in the last row. I always sat in the last row of the plane. I was the DJ. So I would take requests. I was playing stuff I liked, and then I would play. At that time, hip-hop was huge, just starting. Mm-hmm. So we're playing a lot of hip-hop. Of course, the country dudes, you got to play their country music every once in a while.
Yep.
All that stuff.
For certain.
So I'm going to pitch game one of the World Series, which is in the next day or 2 days. So I'm sitting in the back plane. I'm just chilling. I got a Bud Light. I'm relaxing, and I'm watching this plane get destroyed by not only husbands on the plane, but also the wives who had come to cheer them on.
Right.
There are seats being ripped out. There's food being thrown. There's champagne sprayed all over the plane.
Wow.
So anyways, we destroy the plane. We have practice the next day, and Davey Johnson, our manager, comes in, and he's got a bill. And the bill is for, I don't know, $50,000, $60,000 of damage that we did on the plane. So he picks up the bill, and he says, listen, this is the damage you guys did on the plane, and you know what I think about this bill? And we're all like, oh, we're going to have to share this, whatever. He ripped it in half. He goes, you're making plenty of money for this team. Don't worry about it. So
we had to really set the tone.
He set the tone for the whole World Series and everything else. It was really fun. Hey, where did you sit on the plane?
I sat, my first few years, I kind of sat in the middle back. And then as veteran players started getting traded away, that became, you know, my rise in the hierarchy of, you know, plane sitting. So Harry Callis sat in the back. If you're walking towards the back of the plane, he sat in the very last row on the left-hand side. Exactly. That's what I said.
Wow.
That's where it was, and no one questioned it. I remember I asked maybe Scott Rowland, like, why is Harry back here? I know he's cool. I thought he's back there for a conversation to talk, and he was like, that's where he sits, and you don't question it. I mean, you let it be. So, when he was alive, I think I sat two rows ahead of him, you know, just gave him his space. After his passing, that became my row. I sat in the very back left, and I just took that spot. And, you know, it was just like I was the longest tenured player on a team. And, you know, when Harry was there, he was the longest tenured person in the organization.
Yeah.
And that's whose seat that was, the person with the most time, but also more than anything, the most respect. Like, you respected that seat. When I moved in, I didn't do it immediately. For the first year or two after he passed, I moved back one row, but I didn't sit in the very back.
Yeah.
And eventually I just made my way back there.
That's one of the coolest stories ever. Cause I mean, everyone I know who's ever played baseball loves Harry. I mean, he just was so Philadelphia, so great.
All the way.
Iconic voice, all of that kind of stuff. And that you felt honored enough to take his seat and sit there. That's really cool. You know, when I first started playing, the media guys were like royalty on our plane. So on planes, usually there's some first class seats, maybe 10 or 12 or so, and that's where the coaches sit or whatever. But when I started playing, Ralph Kiner and Bob Murphy, those guys sat in the first class seats. It was nowadays it's not. I travel on the plane every once in a while, and we are the persona non grata. It's like Why are these guys here?
Right.
Where do we put them?
Right.
Let's put them near the door, you know, whatever, which is cool. You know what I mean?
The emergency exit over the wings.
Oh, exactly. What's the noisiest part of the plane? So what was your favorite city and favorite hotel?
Ooh, favorite city. Miami. I'm just keeping 100. You know, Miami had a lot going on. And, you know, the nightlife was great. I remember it was maybe after my rookie year. We were out of it coming down the stretch. Maybe it was my second year. And we have the last three games in Miami. You have Preston Wilson and that crew over there. And let's just say we never made it back to the hotel. And yet we found a way to show up the next day, which is something your 86 Mets did, I'm sure, a lot of. But it was like, this is what it's like. Like, we're out. We're, you know, we go into the club spaces, and I'm walking out at 9 a.m. and people are just parking, going to work. And a part of me felt guilty. It's like, this is horrible. Like, I'm able to go out and party while people actually have to get up and work.
Exactly.
So, you know, partying, I mean, we're on a bridge. We got a car full of a whole bunch of pretty young ladies. And just like, if we don't make it to the club because the bridge is up, then we're going to party right here on the bridge. That's just what you do in Miami.
That's great.
And hotel. I did love the Westin Hallandale Beach, which was a fantastic hotel. Atlanta was actually pretty good. It switched names since, but
yeah.
I liked it because it was in Buckhead, and you had the mall right across the street. I can't remember if it's the high-end mall. You had Lenox Mall to your right and Phipps Plaza,
Phipps,
which just comes straight across. So for me, I mean, I was in heaven. I had, you know, the Ritz, which the Ritz speaks for itself, and, you know, 300 feet away, I had all the shopping I wanted
to do.
So between those hotels and the city of Miami, I had a lot of fun.
Here's a question for you. You know, you're from the Bay Area, so when you'd go in to play the Giants, was that fun or tough? Because sometimes it's tough with family.
It was both. It was tough because before they made us buy tickets, you just borrow tickets from somebody else, you know, who's not using their tickets, and you knew where people's family were. And we had a lot of California guys. Fortunately for me, they were mostly in SoCal. So they may get, you know, a handful of, you know, family members of the other California guys, but they all knew I'm from the Bay. We were playing the Giants, or the occasional times that we played the A's. 3 days before, are you using your tickets? For the guys that for sure weren't, nope, take all four. And I'm telling Frank, hey, I got this, I got that, I got this, I got that. My second year in, I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I would call my mom. Look, I have 20 tickets. I got 25 tickets. I have 15 tickets.
Yeah.
Whoever calls you, you can decide who comes to the game. It doesn't matter. There are 3 days. I know I for sure have 15 to 20 tickets every day. That's 45 to 60 people, you know, that I'm going to see this weekend. And obviously you have the repeats, brother, sister, mom, dad. But after that, it's like, I'm not dealing with it because it just became too much. I'm writing names down and. You know what, I'm not gonna be able to make it tonight. Can I do it tomorrow? Like, I'm not doing that. I have to go play a game. But as far as playing in front of them, I loved every second of it. I wish I performed better. Hit a couple bombs. Well, you know, that's all they want to see, at least hit one home run. So I have a couple of those, steal some bases, make some plays. And it was always exciting when my high school coach would show up. And it was like, okay, whether I get hit or not, he wants to see me play good defense. If I get on base, he wants to see me steal a bag. So I always took pride, especially when he was there. Obviously, I wanted to get hit, but, you know, hits aren't give me's. You're not just going to walk up and fall out of bed getting hits. But you have to make the play, and if you get on base, my job was to steal.
That's funny. You know, I never, talking about hotels, and there were a lot of cities that I liked. Pittsburgh was a sleeper city for me.
Ooh.
I loved Pittsburgh. It's just the really down-to-earth people, blue-collar folks. We knew a place that would stay open after the clubs or bars were closed. And it only had, like, the waiters and waitresses and chefs from all Pittsburgh would end up at this place, had a jukebox. It was just so much fun. But I never believed in ghosts until I went to Milwaukee.
Ooh, the Pfister.
So Milwaukee Pfister Hotel. I'm not OCD, but I always did the same thing when I got to a town. I'd unpack my bag, I'd hang all the clothes up, I'd put the things down, because I'm a kind of a clean person by nature. So mm-hmm. I like to have everything in order in my room so I know where everything is. And the Pfister Hotel, I'd come back after a game, like things would be moved. It was the craziest thing. Did you ever have any of those kind of things in the Pfister?
You know what? I can't be certain that I did not. You know, I would hear things, and I would swear like you, like I put something here and it end up somewhere else. And it's like, am I tripping? Or did I just forget that I put it there? You know, the middle of the night, you cut off all the lights. You wake up like, why is this bathroom light on? Like, I swear I cut it off. And, you know, I'm getting chills thinking about it. It was definitely some funny stuff going on there. But it made the first two nights were for sure the most uncomfortable nights of sleep you'll get. After a while, you just say, you know what? I can't even worry about it. Sleep with the TV on, sleep with the lights on, do what you have to do, but just get some rest. Because those first two nights, you hear about it. Okay, it's a spooky thing. And you hear a sound. And then your brain starts going, oh, my goodness. You know, and then coming up being a kid watching Michael Jackson Thriller, what's coming out the room? What's coming from underneath the bed? So the Pfister, I'm like you. I don't believe in ghosts, but I believe in a Pfister.
You know, when I used to be on the road, I think my first 6, maybe 7 years, I wasn't married of my career. So whenever you'd go out, I just found it really awkward to say, you know, I'm a baseball player, you know, right. I'm a pitcher for the Mets. Like, mm-hmm. you didn't want to do that. So mm-hmm. I used to make up these stories. I don't know if you ever did this. I used to make up the stories. My favorite one to use was if you met a young lady, I would say that I was a defensive back in the Canadian Football League. That was my go-to. Like, oh, because, you know, we all look kind of like athletes, so you can't completely kind of fib it. So that was my go-to. I said, yeah, I played defensive back in the Canadian Football League. Well, one time I was found out in that lie because the lady that I was talking to, her brother played in the Canadian Football League, and I couldn't even come up with what I couldn't even come up with what team. You know, she's like, "Do you play for the Alouettes?"
And
I was like,
"Oh, right.
Where's the Alouettes, Montreal?" You know, I could not even come up with it. So she caught me good. So I know exactly.
You know, I'm trying to think. If I was always, you know, being short helps, because I can always disguise myself as a student.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I can always disguise myself as a student, and I was just here on vacation, and I'm in town for a couple of days, and I'm going, you know, somewhere else. So I didn't have the football thing going. That would have been a hard sell. I'm 5'7", you know, 165. what position do you play? You know, you're a little small for anything on the football field. But, you know, being a student, you know, on vacation, you know, it worked, especially being young. You know, I was 21 when I got caught up to the big league. So I was right in that perfect age of being a student.
Did you, once you got to be a veteran on your team, because you're probably like the biggest personality on your team, were you in charge of where people sat on the plane? Like if, say, a rookie came up and he sat in a place that you thought was improper, you'd say, hey, I think you should move up a little.
I may have done that once, maybe twice.
Okay.
And it was just to, you know, make sure they knew the rules of the plane. They sit somewhere and I'm like, hey, you know, you're a little deep. And look, if somebody with more service time than you wants to sit there, you have to move. It isn't even a question. If they don't mind, if no one says anything, I don't care. But if someone comes back, like, I don't care if you sat there half the season. If someone comes in, you know what? I want to switch seats for any reason. I don't like sitting in a seat because I'm in a slump or something. I know I just want to switch seats because that's where I want to sit. Or, you know, the money game's back there. I want to get closer to that to hear the conversation. And the reason why I didn't go hard because I was that young kid. You know, I got as close as I could to danger without getting in trouble. You know, and because of my early success, they let me hang out. I still didn't have a seat. You know, I got to hang out. I had to go sit next to the window, but at least I was able to, you know, ear hustle and be part of the conversation and see what was going on, which was very educational because sometimes, you know, they're talking life, Sometimes they're talking politics. When we're talking about politics, I mean of baseball. You know, how the front office works, you know, trades and contracts, all things that you don't know until you hear someone who has experienced that. And now you know what to look forward to when it's maybe your turn, or just learning something about life, learning something about the road, or just hearing good stories.
Yeah, it really is educational, life on the road, because the one thing I found in baseball is that no one can hide who you are. Everyone's going to see it because you're literally living with each other for 6 months. So it's kind of, you know, the kinder you are, the better you are, the better teammates you're going to be as you move forward.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Well, Jimmy, we're so lucky. Ryan Dempster is joining us. Ryan, we've been spending most of this time, J-Roll and I, trying to walk the fine line of telling stories from the road. What's one of your favorites? What's one of your favorites? Oh,
well, we knew this was going to be good.
Yeah. You know, Ron, favorite story on the road. Man, I got so many. I think probably one of my favorite ones that I ever had or we ever had was a friend of both of ours, all of ours, Kevin Millar. We were playing in LA. We went to the Dodger game, played in the Dodger game, and then Kevin was having a barbecue at the house afterwards, his mom's house, out in the hills there in California. And after the barbecue, we were going to go up to Gary Sheffield's house because Garrett Sheff had been traded over to the Dodgers from the Marlins, and so he was going to host us all for little, you know, late night activities. Well, Kevin was very nice, and you know, we appreciated the fact he got us two limos. And the two limos he got, I guess he rented them from Rent-A-Wreck or what. But because the first limo, one of the limos, the AC went out. And you got to remember, this is like August in LA.
Steaming hot. Steaming hot.
On the 405 in traffic, smoking.
Parking lot.
Guys are getting out at Kevin's house with his shirts off because we're just sweating bullets, you know. So now we get rid of that limo and we all pile in. And of course, Kevin is such a great teammate. He doesn't want Gary to drive by himself, so he drives in Gary's Porsche up to the hills up there. And so now we're all in this one limo, and we get to the gates at the Pacific Palisades where Chef was living. And we, you know, hit the buzzer, you know, beep, bop, bop, beep, and they call up to Gary Sheffield to come pick us up. And all of a sudden, the limo driver starts yelling at us, get out, get out, get out. We're not doing anything wrong, man. And all of a sudden, so we start rifling out, and the limo is on fire.
Get out of here.
I'm not kidding. At the gate, it starts crackling, and we're all piling out. Here comes, you know, all these guys are getting out. LeVon Hernandez is getting out. Mike Lowell's getting out. Brad Penny's getting out. We're all getting out, and all of a sudden, LeVon forgot his purse, his man purse, his man satchel. Purse.
Yeah, his merce. Yeah, his merce. Yep.
His merce. And all of a sudden, we all just get out, and you just hear this like, and this thing just bursts.
Oh,
wow. Flames. Wow.
Yeah. And the best part was Chef came down with his Range Rover. We all hopped in. We're like, all right, dude, see you later.
See you later.
We just left the burning limo at the front gate.
It's not my car. I don't know. They offered a ride. I jumped in. That's all I can tell you.
Man, so from now on, if you guys need limos, you just ask 1-5. Kevin will get you limos.
1-5 will definitely not be getting me a limo. I'll tell you that much. So, Demp, everybody has their favorite city or cities. And reasons why. You can share the reasons why, you know, but
yeah.
what if you could go top three and, you know, maybe three through one through three, whichever order, what would they be? And, you know, why?
Okay. I'm going to leave Chicago out of it because that's my home city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a great city. Number one, I think, would be New York.
Ooh.
Because I don't like to sleep, and when you go to the city that never sleeps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, ask the 86 Mets, right?
Yes. Ryan, we have something in common because I'm not a sleeper either. I'm the 4 to 6 hours, maybe, tops.
It's a pitcher thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a pitcher thing, you know. I was the kind of guy who always was that way. I could stay out, you know, until 4 a.m, and then I'd be up bright and early going and getting my jog in. So.
That's right.
Yeah, I just always kind of worked that way. And I think that New York, I love the kind of the anonymity of it. How do you say that? Anonymity of it all. Like you could just be anonymous there and you could disappear there.
Yeah.
And I would at times, like I just would be like, you know, the game would end and it's like, I'm not going back to the hotel. I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going to end up tonight. And I'm just going to go have fun. And, you know, it's like you're knocking on some door that doesn't look like a door, and the next thing you know, it opens up, and there's a club in the back. You're like, this is great.
Man, tell me about it.
Yeah, I just love that, you know, and the food.
That's right.
You know, the first time I ever went on a road trip when I was with the Marlins and get called up to New York, and the bus pulled up, and I gave my backpack to the clubhouse attendant, and I said, can you put that in my room? I'm going to Times Square. And I just went and I watched dudes playing Three Card Monty, and
wow.
You know, I was enjoying it all. So I'd say number one, New York. Number two, I love San Francisco.
Yeah.
Oof, love the city by the bay.
Yeah. It has a lot of kind of the similar aspects in a little bit. But just like, you know, I grew up on the West Coast. I grew up outside of Vancouver, British Columbia. So I love that cold sea air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That made me feel like home a little bit, you know, and just walking down in the mornings because you'd be on the, you know, for me, I played most of my career on the West or on the East Coast or Central. 2-hour difference. You talk about not sleeping, Ronnie. I'm up at 6.
That's like, right.
Yeah. I remember going with Kent Merker over to the park there and playing, you know, the people who were in the park there, the homeless guys playing chess for cigarettes. I don't even smoke. But I had to go buy a pack of cigarettes if I wanted in the game. So
that's right.
It was like, you know, I would go do that. So that was probably number two. And number three for me, probably if I had to, you know, pick one, Denver.
Ooh.
I loved Denver.
Ooh, explain.
It was a big city. I love the ballpark, even though I pitched terrible there. I pitched terrible. That ballpark is awesome, and I love the mountains. So, you know, when I had a chance anytime to wake up to go for a hike up there, I ended up moving there in my off season, spending you know, quite a few years living in Denver. So those are probably my top three right there.
Yeah, I just got out of Denver. I love that town as well. The only problem you have in Denver now is when you walk from the ballpark to your hotel, there's a pungent aroma that exists in that entire town, and sometimes you get a little headache by the time you get back to your hotel room. But that's all cool, too.
I thought it alleviated headaches, Ron.
There you go.
And Ron, you said problem. I was trying to figure out what the problem
is. Ding, 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 ding.
You know, J-Roll and I were talking about the planes and how the people on the planes, the flight attendants, the pilots, people that travel you, whether they're with Delta or another airline, kind of become your family because you see them all year long. And J-Roll and I were talking about where we sat on the plane. I was all the way back on the right-hand side, and I was the DJ with the boombox. J-Roll sat all the way back on the left, which used to be Harry Callis's seat, but when Harry passed away, J-Roll, like, inherited that seat, really. But where did you sit on the planes?
Close to the back, usually on either the right or left, because I was a card player. Okay. So wherever the card game was at. But it was usually, like, you know, probably within about three rows from the back. And I always kind of sat on the left side, same sort of thing on the, you know, if you're looking, or if you're walking down the aisle towards the back of the plane, on the right side, but three rows back right there. You're right, though. Like, you know, some of those, they became family. Flight attendants, Sylvie Menges, who worked for the Cubs as our liaison with United. I remember she came up to like one of the very first flights and was like, "Hey, fill this out." And I filled out this, you know, frequent flyer thing. I didn't even think anything of it because we were flying United. So all of a sudden, I retire from baseball. I get like 700,000 air miles, courtesy of her. You know, so every time like, I take my family, I book like a multi, you know, all five or six of us on the plane, I'm like, text her, like, thank you.
That's the plug.
Those are on you, you know?
That is the plug right there. Man, that's that is what's up. So, why, and I guess I'm asking myself also, why is the seat arrangement important, though? Like, we talk about it and, you know, and where we sat, and it's an unwritten thing. No one says why it's important. At least not in my generation. I never understood it. It was just like, this is what it was. I follow the rules. Why do we, I guess anyone can take a shot at this, why do we put such importance on where someone sits?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's things that are earned, you know, and they take a little time to get, you know, in any walk of life. We talked about New York. You walk into Campagnola's, they're up there on First Avenue. You walk in, there's somebody sitting at the bar, they're probably from out of town. Then you walk to another table, they're maybe not out of town. Now you start to get farther back in the restaurant, there starts to be the locals, you know, and the regulars. And then all of a sudden, that back corner, there's somebody's kissing that ring in the back corner.
That's right.
And that's how it works on the plane ride. It's like, you don't just get, first of all, if you're a rookie, you shouldn't even get to sit down. You should. I know we got flight attendants, but you're going to go get my
getting
beer.
Everybody's beer, right.
Yeah. And everybody gives a hard time, right? They always write, oh, the rookies, they shouldn't have to do that. Like, all you have to do it is once and not complain about it, and they're not going to ask you again. Now, all of a sudden, it's like you're going to dinner. It's like you're getting invited to dinner. You're getting a nice new suit because you understood that these guys that were all there before you, you know, busted their tail, like, and earned that seat back there. It's not given to you. It's earned. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why.
I think also the further back you go, the further you're from the coaches and the manager. Mm. That's always a good move, too.
Facts. 100%. Facts for certain. Yeah. It didn't matter good or bad, win or loss. Like, I'm getting the hell all the way back there. Y'all can have that up there. When times were good, everybody always has, you know, a coach that almost had, you know, free admission anywhere. I mean, coaches, managers, they can walk anytime they want. But one coach that would hang out for just enough time to let you know he was still cool. He's still down with it. And I enjoyed it because it was like you were almost on your best behavior, but it was like the cool uncle. Like, I could still get down because he's not going to say nothing, even though he's real good buddies with the manager or the bench coach, third base coach. But he's still cool. Like, he all right. And then he gets to that point, it's like, all right, fellas, it's time for me to check out. And it was like, yo, that I like him. He's cool. And you build a different type of relationship than just one that's in uniform with them. So I did like the one coach that could come back and hang out, but understood he's no longer a player.
The Sarge, man. Gary Matthews.
Yes.
He would come back when I was got over the Cubs. He'd come back just like that, just long enough to visit the veteran in the back that was carrying the top shelf, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He had the good stuff, you know. He wasn't going to drink the Bud Lights. He was going to come get a nice little glass of something neat from one of the veteran guys. Hang out for a little bit. He'd talk. He'd pump some dudes up about what a great game they had. He'd pick somebody up who was bad, you know. He'd peek at the card game. He'd tell a couple stories and make you laugh, make you feel good, and then he'd go back up. He was the best, man, the best.
Every team has the same group of kind of coaches. You got the one coach that nobody wants back in the plane. Like, get out of here. You don't belong back here. You got the really kind of real sweet, Christian, kind of goody-two-shoes kind of coach that's he doesn't want to be back there because he's afraid of the people that are back there. And then you have the coach who probably imbibes a little too much on the plane. And we all have those coaches, right? And you get off the plane and you're saying, oh, man, I wonder if he's going to make it down them stairs. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, for certain. We're certain.
And then you always got a couple players that you wish would go sit up with the coaches.
Exactly. For real. For real. The ones in the back of the plane, they have enough time to be in the back, but always complain you're too loud. Like, bro, like, you know what happens back here. Like, if that's the case, there is a section in between meeting the coaches where you can go sit happily and rest, sleep, or do whatever you want. But like, you out with music, cards, and it was, look, bro, we got a 4-hour flight going west. We got a 25-hour flight. When we land, we're going to turn up. So we just starting early. I mean, why spend the extra money to get into the club and get a feel good when we could do it right here on the team? The team is paying for this.
That was my best. My wife now, she came on. We did the flight back after we won in 2013, and we beat Tampa Bay, and we're going from Tampa back to Boston. And we got off the plane. She's like, man, that was like Las Vegas in 35,000 feet.
For certain.
So true. We were also talking, Ryan, about we're talking about hotels, and Jimmy and I both had our Pfister story. Do you have a Pfister hotel story?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to bed in the Pfister. I don't even know why they call it the Pfister. It's, you know, I always like to mess with people when I'm spelling stuff out. I say P is in Pfister just to mess with them. I went to bed. I was on the suite side. So, you know, I had like the tower side, and then you had like the level that was like 4 or 5 floors or whatever it was. And that's where a lot of the suites were. And I went to bed and I set my air conditioning at like 68, 69 degrees. I don't even remember. And I woke up and that thing was frozen.
Whoa.
Like it was, I could see my breath.
Oof.
And it was so eerie. And I went over to turn that thing off. And it was as if somebody breathed on the back of my neck. Like there was like this like of warm air. And it was like, you know, it's freezing in there. They're packing meat in that thing. It is cold. And I'm like, what in the, and I went back under the covers, dude. And I'm like pulling my thing up here.
It's a wrap.
They can't, ghosts can't get you if your feet and your fingers and your toes are under the covers. So
that's the trick. That's the trick. All right. But I got chills. Hey, it is so funny. No one believes in ghosts until they get to the Pfister.
Yeah.
Like we can watch all the ghost stories. We want like whatever, dude. Like there's somebody. Well, you know, have those little wands and stuff. And you go to the Pfister, and everything you thought you didn't believe, you now believe.
Yeah.
Oh
you know
my
how
goodness.
How many dudes? When I was with Chicago, it's 90 miles. We'll commute. We're gonna commute. Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking when you were Jimmy, you were talking about those guys. Or Ryan, those guys on the team, your teammates, that you would like to push up to the front of the plane. We once had a player, I won't say his name because it's not fair, but he was a really great guy, but a real Christian guy. And he used to sign the baseballs, his name, and then John 3:16, you know, a Bible passage, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having a tough year, and he was telling all of us to quiet down. He needed to sleep, you know, he needed to get his rest, whatever. And one of the guys on the team said, hey, if you were hitting 316 instead of writing it on the ball, we might have a better shot here.
Boy,
Hey, one time, it is relentless. I was asked to be the guy that move up, though, one time. Like, somebody told me to get up.
You were young. Wow.
Yeah, well, I was young, and I was running through a lactose intolerant phase.
Oh.
You know? Hey, this is a true story. So we were
gas in the plane.
We were having a family trip, and we were leaving Philly, and the family trip was in Philly at the old. We were playing at the old stadium, and I was mad because now my card game was canceled. Like, I was single and young kid at the time, and all the veterans had played the cards, and everybody played cards. All had their wives, and I'm like, this sucks. So during the game, I go up inside and pound, I get busted by Charles Johnson pounding chocolate milk before the plane flight, you know? And so then there's no card game going on. This is the best. There's no card game going on. So I'm laying down. I'm like listening to music. I'm actually going to take like a rare nap on a plane, like the one of five times in my career I ever took a nap. And I'm asleep. But then I got gas, you know, like really, really bad gas. And I just start letting it out. It is bad gas. And you hear all these dudes like, and CJ, Rhonda goes, man, what is that? And CJ goes, that's damp. And she goes, no, he's sleeping. And he goes, he's not sleeping. I caught his ass drinking chocolate milk during the game. He's busting ass.
Oh, that's funny.
So good, dude.
My goodness, dude. Exactly. Bro, those planes. It's amazing what goes on. Oh man, it's amazing what goes on, and it's, you know, and it can only happen on a plane. Like, it can't happen anywhere else. You're 2 feet from everybody. Like, it only happens on planes.
I somehow sitting on, you know, row 13 seat C today, flying from Chicago to Cincinnati, and just not the same.
Yep.
It's not the same. You know, they're telling me to put my tray table up. I'm like, man, like last flight I took in the big leagues, I was riding safety cars, you know?
That's right. That's
straight up.
Takeoff. So.
Straight up.
Yeah.
My favorite story, Harold Reynolds, who works at the MLB Network, Ryan, you know that, J-Roll, you know him. But we were in a meeting once. There was a lot of kids in the meeting, like 25, 27, whatever. And one of the kids is telling a story about, you know, I was on this flight, had to go to Atlanta. Was right in the middle in row 15, and Harold goes, what? He goes, well, I was in the middle seat in row 15. Harold goes, there's 15 rows on a plane? He goes, I've never seen row 15.
Oh, Lord. That's a good one.
You guys are so right. There's things that happen on a plane over the course of 6 months that's a big part of the kind of how close and the kind of team you're going to have at the end of the year, because the things on there are things you can't always talk about, but they bring you closer, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what happens is it's natural progression. It's like it helps build relationships really fast. Because like you're sitting on this plane, everybody's hanging out, and then you walk to go get something. You know, somebody's watching a movie. What are you watching? Oh, you like the next thing you know, you find out a lot about guys. And you know, hey, you're going to a city. Are you going to, you want to come to dinner? Oh, I got family. Oh, your family there. You find out where people are from or where their family's from. And it really helps connect you a lot. And like, you know, and then you got drinks flowing and everybody's kind of opening up and it's music going and it's this protective bubble, right? You're floating in the air at 35,000 feet. You know, there's nobody taking pictures. There's nobody, you know, there's no fans there to like interject in anything. You're not in a restaurant where there's other people. It's you all together. And it's, to me, that's the thing I probably miss the most outside of the actual competition between the white lines is those plane rides. I love them so much. And, you know, just an absolute blast and how everybody kind of had their role. This dude brought the music. This dude brought Xavier and Nady brought a full on, you know, margarita making kit. I mean, this was pro, you know, closet with shakers and glass, you know, I mean, you know, like that kind of stuff that you just couldn't duplicate anywhere else. And, you know, it was pretty special.
Jamie Quirk was one of our coaches and we used to call him Q, and we would always play Susie Q by Creedence Clearwater Revival. Yeah. And we'd be screaming on the plane, Jamie Q, over and over again. It's just, it's things that, I'm with you guys. I miss them just as much. It wasn't until later in my career, and I'll end it with this. It wasn't until later in my career, and I had been single for the first 6-7 years I was in the major leagues, but we had those family trips, and guys would come on with their families, whatever. And I used to always like pick out two or three guys, and I'd say, hey, hey, shh. And they'd reach down, you know, they'd put their head down. I'd go, hey, I didn't know you were married.
Oh, the sailout game. Oh, my goodness.
They would get so pissed at me. Like, don't say that. Woo, she might hear you.
Those are fighting words, but you know, and my little bow on what you guys said, it really hit me just now, is the clubhouse is sacred ground, you know. But you there's still, and yes, you know, the visiting guys are great; they're absolutely fantastic. But there are people walking through the clubhouse. You don't know when a reporter or someone's going to be there, so you're still watching what you say and do. But when you get on that airplane, you're out of uniform and you're just you. With your family, you're with them so much. So you're talking about, you know, getting to know guys a whole different side that you didn't even know existed, because you decided to sit down, like you say, watch a movie with them. You take off the headphones and you're talking in depth, like, wow, like, I liked you, but I really like you. You can be free. Yeah. You can express yourself. Sometimes you get you in a little trouble, but you were open and honest. As tight and as close as the clubhouse was, the plane was probably 100 times closer when I look back on it. And that was because you can be yourself in this bubble. No one judged. We had fun. We loved one another. And when we got off, we knew we had some butts to kick.
Yep.
Yeah, I loved it after you have a good game as a pitcher and you grab a cold one and you sit next to your catcher that caught you that day. And
yeah,
you kind of go over the pitches and you're like, brother, I love you. What a game you called today. I mean, you called that slow curve. That was the perfect. It was just, those are the kind of things that I'll always miss. So
I one more to cap it off. I remember taking a plane ride, and, you know, Matt Maddox was going for win number 300 against the Mets in Chicago. And they brought a right-handed reliever in, this guy. and I blew his first chance at 300.
Wow.
And we were always in the card game together on the plane. Now we're flying out west. And, you know, we're going to do L.A. and San Francisco. And we get on the plane, and Doggy looks at me. You know, we're getting the cards going. We're dealing for his hand. He just looks over me and goes, I'm pissed off at you. And I was feeling terrible.
Yeah,
right?
of course, I'm feeling
so bad. And I was like, Doggy, I am so sorry, man. I cannot believe I blew that 300th win. He goes, oh, I'll get more wins. It's not that I'm that mad about. And I go, what? He goes, I had tee times at San Francisco Country Club. And I had tee times at Olympic Club, and now my family's got to come to San Francisco for 300. You messed that up.
That's funny. Well, he would only end up with 355, I think. So he had a few more wins in him. Yeah. Hey, rules of the road, unwritten. Yep. Jimmy Rollins, Ron Darling, thank you, Ryan Dempster, for coming on. You're the best.
Absolutely, guys. Good to be with you.
Don't you just love when someone looks at you and says, what were you up to last night? Well, no matter how late you were up the night before, Lumify Redness Reliever Eye Drops can help your eyes look more refreshed and awake. Lumify dramatically reduces redness in just 1 minute to help your eyes look brighter and whiter for up to 8 hours. No wonder it has over 6,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. You won't believe your eyes. You know you can trust them, though, because they're made by the eye care experts at Bausch & Lomb, and they're backed by 6 clinical studies. Eye doctors trust them too. They're the number one recommended redness reliever eye drop. The one and only Lumify is an amazing drop that will have people saying, something's different about you, in the best possible way. So check out LumifyEyes.com to learn more.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So, Jimmy, I was telling you before that I used to play DJ, and a lot of the guys would bring back their music that they wanted me to play. An Oakland band, you know this band, En Vogue, was huge when we were playing.
My very first concert.
Really?
My very first concert. I love Cindy.
That's the biggest crush. I'm like, I'm going to marry her one day.
Boy, she was pretty, wasn't she? One of the ladies from that band, from that group, ended up marrying Glenn Braggs, I think, who was a baseball player with the Cincinnati Reds.
We'd
play that. We had a lot of new hip hop that no one even knew about because Straw was from the hood in L.A. These guys.
Yep.
So we had a lot of that stuff. We had the country western stuff I did not know, George Strait and other. I just throw it in there. And this is the funniest part about it. I'm old enough that we had CDs. We were just plopping CDs in there. And I used to get, I had a big boombox, and I'd have...
Ryan, you guys still had tape. When you started, you guys still had tape. CDs came a little later. Come on, Elvis. Yeah, come on. Keep it real. Keep it all the way 100. You started out with the tape player in the back. You had to press the pause and the play to time it up. Come on now.
I was not the DJ until there were CDs.
Gotcha.
Like the DJ before
Fair
me
enough.
Was the tape player.
Fair enough.
And but it was so much fun just playing music and playing it loud. I used to carry the bag with me. With the extra D batteries, you know, those big D batteries that you had to put in there. And that bag weighed a ton. But after a while, you were able to push it off on like a younger guy. You'd say, hey, listen, this bag right here, it's got the D batteries. It's got the Bud Lights. It's got all the cards, the poker chips. You're carrying that. So
I had to carry. I had to carry the damn boombox. Like whatever. that was me until a younger player came up. I did my time, you know, hey, carry this. And you couldn't say no. It could have been a bag of ice, had nothing to do with anything. Carry it. You took it on a plane. It's like, man, this is so messed up. But where do you guys want this? You would need me to take it somewhere?
That's right. Hey, so if you had only one store to shop in, because we got from this thing that you love to shop, where would you go?
Ooh, wow. You know what? I was heavy on Neiman Marcus.
Nice.
And then I upgraded to Bergdorf.
Whoa.
When I found out about Bergdorf, it cost a little bit more money. As the names got longer, the more expensive the stores became. And you know, I'm a Louis Vuitton guy when it comes to shoes. I still like Louis to this day. Glasses, I'll go Louis and Gucci.
Wow.
Shirts, it would just be, you know, what caught my eye. In the early 2000s, Robert Graham used to take care of me, so I was heavy into Robert Graham. It was just the way it was, you know, those shirts and all the designs. And I'm 5'7", but I was wearing baggy pants. And I look at myself now, like, what were you? You already short, dude. Like, you don't need to walk around looking like a Smurf. But that's what I did. But don't get me wrong. I had my fly stuff, you know, I call it the Euro fit that fit, you know, a little more nice and, you know, made me present myself in a much different fashion. But it really depended on, you know, where we were going at night. So I had the style for any occasion and it didn't matter. You weren't going to catch me out of pocket.
So if you guys want to catch Jimmy shopping, you go to Bergdorf Goodman. It's on 58th Street and 5th Avenue, New York City, on the southeast corner. He'll be there probably on the third
floor. Bring your wallets.
Great. After talking about all this road stuff, I think I've learned a few things. One, if I'm going to party in Miami, I'm doing it with you. Second, if
no
I
doubt.
Need to know any shopping tips, I'm going to get them from you.
Ron, I keep you fresh. I keep you fresh.
Yeah. Well, watch out at the Pfister Hotel because someone might take your stuff. And the most important, I think, out of the show that we got, you ended up sitting in Harry Callis's seat. That, to me, is the coolest thing ever. Unwritten, Jimmy Rollins, Ron Darling. Thanks. Unwritten is a production of Odyssey and Major League Baseball. Our senior producer is Paul Aspen of Odyssey with Ian Kay of Major League Baseball. Lena Glazer is the executive producer of 2400 Sports at Odyssey. Jody Avergan and Nick Trotta of MLB are executive producers. Special thanks to everyone at Major League Baseball and Odyssey who helped make this show happen. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating or a review in your podcast or player of choice. Or just tell someone about the show. For Jimmy Rollins, I'm Ron Darling. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with more on baseball's Unwritten Rules.